So I said, let's make sure that we have access to the this room from the outside so that you can, people can come and go, students can come and go, and you don't have to tramp through the first floor of the house to get here. And he went me one better once we got going and we had a couple of architects working on it. We put bathrooms down there for male and female bathrooms. And we really created a beautiful place for these kids to have their parties. And the whole theory was if you create that kind of a place and make it reasonably attractive, then you could insist on some really stringent rules about the first floor of the house, which was to be the show place of the house, and second, third, four bedrooms too. You could just cause them to understand that they party here, but not up there. Mm-hmm. So that was the approach we took, and a lot of steel and concrete are now in that house. I've never seen so much steel and concrete as when in that house. So I doubt if you can ever burn that house down again. Of course, it has all the latest in fire prevention and security alarms, etc. But there's enough steel and concrete in that house, anyway, to make a long story short, it's solidly built. It'd be hard to dynamite that place down now. The exterior walls really are just a skin. It's like a shell. They aren't bearing walls. Those stone walls are there. And the stone was put back, but there's lots of steel inside that stone that really holds up those concrete floors. The whole thing, concrete. Hmm. It's a strong place now. Well, it'd be like a bloody bang vault. Mm-hmm. The house is strong, and once we got a couple of local interior decorators involved, and it was my thought that we could have reintroduced oriental rugs. It was my thought also that we would have to get round tables in the dining room. I made a huge thing about round tables in the dining room because I believe round tables engender conversation. And so we weren't going to do the rectangular thing anymore. I remember finding a source for those and finding the, I think I was in charge of buying the tables and chairs. I advocated glass tops for the table so that you could put a tablecloth down and then put a glass top cut round, and then so that you could wipe off that in a hurry and you'd have a tablecloth look. We finally ran out of money and didn't do that, but I had discovered that little thing over around on Lincoln Women's College. I thought that was the neatest thing. Mm-hmm. The entire dining room is done that way. And you really walk into a wonderful dining room and you have the sense that there are tablecloths and linen everywhere, and yeah, when students get up from their meal, their tables are quickly wiped off, and it's beautiful again, and the tablecloth is not soiled. Well, the fine gams to this minute do have tablecloths up there in round tables. The house was so successful in its reopening that indeed Historic Garden Week in Virginia approached us to open it for Garden Week in the spring of 19. It would have probably been 86, I guess it would have been. And to my everlasting joyful memory, 700 or 800 and some odd souls toured Washington Lee Fraternity House on Historic Garden Week in Virginia that particular spring, which I think was probably exactly 2 years after it had burned. And that was a great moment for the fraternity, and slides exist if you're interested, pictures of that great day.
Well, I'm going to have to track that down.
Well, I've got at least there's a picture I know of a Historic Garden Week sign pointing to the house.
Oh, I'd love to have that.
Yeah. One of the last things we did was the instant front yard, because earlier that month, I kept promising the co-chairman of the Historic Garden Week that we would have a yard. So we it, I shouldn't say, but in the fraternity did from, get the source where it was out in Maryland or wherever, but turf was brought in. In other words, it became instant yard. That was a gorgeous sod that was laid down on it for that yard, in the front yard. And of course, Jay Gillum, a local at the time, was working in the landscaping business, and Jay planted that beautiful yarpon, holly, I guess, bush. I guess it's a yarpon, I guess, what is it called? The fire bush, flame bush, whatever. That looks so pretty in the fall. But make a long story short, a lot of thought went into the landscaping, and a lot of thought went into the interior decoration. We chose indoor, what do you call it, cargo. I'm starting to think of indoor, outdoor carpet, that's not what I meant at all. That heavy-duty cargo furniture for the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
Just about indestructible. And we concluded that one thing we wanted to get rid of was the notion that every kid was going to have grandmama's old sofa in his or her room. So we concluded that we were going to have a state-of-the-art situation in which every student was going to have, just like a dormitory in their freshman year, they would be assigned a room based on their GPA. The best rooms would go to the highest students in their GPA record, and then also that each room would have a desk and a bureau drawer and a desk and a chair and a bed. And so when the kids came back that following fall to occupy that house, they were totally overwhelmed. They were also totally overwhelmed to meet a woman named Carol Vogt, who was to be Washington's first house mother, returning house mother. Now, Carol Vogt had come to the Alumni College, and that's how we first made her acquaintance. I had Rob Fury put me on her case, and I talked to her and thought well of her, and had Ed Bishop and others interview her later on. And she had a son who had come to Washington, so she had been a Washington parent.
Mm-hmm.
And knew a little bit about the university, and she was available. She lived in Rudd, and her husband was deceased. And so Carol arrived to become the first house mother back on this campus, and you have to appreciate how much she was not wanted by that fraternity to understand the challenge this woman had. I remember introducing her to the boys that September night when they came back, and I said, "Now, I want you to meet Mrs. Vogt, and let me tell you something. She's had 5 children, and there's nothing this woman hasn't seen. So don't think you're going to pull anything on her that she's not aware." Anyway, Carol had her ups and downs for a long time. Bless her heart, she is no longer at the university. After she was with the Fagans for 6 or 7 or 8 years at least, and then for her last couple of years here, I think she took the Phi Delta on for a while. But she was the pioneer. She was the first back. Now, at a time earlier on, back in the 50s, 60s, when there were lots of them, as there are today, it was a nice sorority kind of house mothers had a fun time together, and they had each other for support. But in the very early days, Carol only had me and my wife for support.
Yeah.
And don't you think we didn't get an awful lot of phone calls?
Well, I bet you did.
Generally, 3 or 4 times a night for an awful long period. And she surely needed support. And but it was tough to get her in there, and she was in a position of having to execute. She was the employee of the House Corporation, so she was there to protect their investment, and that's what the students were given to be to understand. Some didn't, and they were burned for it, because Ed Bishop is a tough taskmaster, and Ed said it's literally going to be my way or the highway. And his rule was that if you were to break something, you were going to pay double to replace it. And if you broke something a second time, he would triple or quadruple your cost. If you broke something a third time, you were just flat out of there. You were gone. You were history. And that he wasn't going to tolerate it. And of course, I remember the young president of the House that particular year said, "Well, Mr. Bishop, this isn't the real world." And he says, "That's exactly right. It's my world. And you are not going to abuse this house. Now, I've got to protect the investment of too many other alumni here, and you just aren't going to, you're not here to tear it up. We've given you a great place to have your social events, and you can rip and roar down there. And we're not going to be prudish about that at all, but you are not going to destroy this house." And, you know, it's been a year or two since I've been in the Phi Gamma living room, I guess, but I know for the first 10 years, yeah, it's been about 10 years now, 86, yeah. I think I could walk in there today and that house would be very close to the way it looked the day we had open for Garden Week, with the possible exception of the flower arrangements, which would be there, but the ladies had provided. But the Garden Week guest book would be there, and the and a lot of other touches are still there in the decoration scheme. And that's a great victory, I think, because there are so many people at this university who said to me and others, "You must be out of your gourd. You must be nuts. They'll tear up those Orientals in 2 weeks' time."
It was a great leap of faith.
They are still there, and they're there because as bad as the Phi Gams may be, and as much trouble as they continue to be in, the fact of the matter is they did respect this new environment. They were in something that they were vastly proud of, and they took care of it, and therefore they were allowed to have some of their major social events, such as the fancy dress or parents' weekends. They were able to have their cocktail parties on the first floor of the house for those sorts, alumni weekend, parents' weekend. They have had their one big formal that they did every January. Formal occasions when they had dates, they were allowed to use the first floor of the house. But otherwise, the first floor of the house, the dining room, and all that is kept in pristine shape to this minute. And I'm proud of them for that. But what happened, frankly, was that about the time this little experiment, that we will just call it what it was going on there, there was a growing observation throughout the university community at what was going on. And alumni were looking at it.
And I'd love to get that story.
It's running out of tape.
Well, no, it's not tape. It's just my dog in the car,
okay.
And I'm concerned about her.
Well, I'll finish.
But let's wrap it up.
I'll wrap it up by simply saying that the alumni and others began to think, gosh, if they've done that at the Phi Gamma House, maybe we can do that over here at the Beta House or wherever. And so an alumni fraternity council was just in the process of forming, which was to be headed by Colonel Paul Murphy, who was a member at the time. I was alumni secretary, and Paul was a member of the alumni board. And so I was able to have a role in all of that simply by keeping in touch. And we gave the alumni board, and of course they formed the alumni fraternity council. And Ed Bishop was one of the first people to go on that council, along with the other House Corporation presidents. And all of them toured the Phi Gamma House, and Ed explained how it was done. And kind of one by one, with John Wilson's help and the treasurer's extraordinary, the board of trustees, everybody, I think, paid attention and recognized, well, if we're going to save this entire Greek system, let's take what the Phi Gammas have done and use that a little bit as a model. And Prattley, I think if you look at all the houses that have been built, even from scratch or remodeled, every single one of them, in one way or the other, very carefully followed the same kind of model, mm-hmm. as far as the basements and the access and all the things that we figured out. So we really did put the model out, and that's fully acknowledged. I don't think anyone would deny the fact that Ed Bishop people talk about the fraternity of Renaissance and Paul Murphy's role, and Lord knows he was a great leader, but even Paul would tell you that without what Ed Bishop did at that Phi Gamma House, he really led the way.
Well, it's certainly how Frank has written it.
Yeah.
In the fraternity's chapter.
Yeah.
He's given full credit to it.
Well, that's a piece of the story of the Phi Gamma House and the rest
well,
of it.
Well, it's an important story. Yeah. That's why I wanted to get it from you, because I knew you were a witness, and I know from what I've read of Frank's chapter that it really is a turning point.
Right. The actual detail of all the rest of it is carefully documented. Mm-hmm. But from at least one eyewitness, that is the background of how it really got started and why. And as I say, the best part of it is it was the good thing that came out of that tragedy.
Yeah, if only every tragedy had
that much good come from
it.
Well, I hope that inevitably good will come. Our fraternity system, as we're speaking here in 1996, is still far, far from perfect. And we've got our problems in it right now, hazing, et cetera. But I think that there's so much there that's worth saving, if only because, and this is a personal view, that, you know, we teach kids an awful lot of things in the classroom at Wesleyan, but in those fraternities or sororities is the opportunity to learn leadership. Leadership is not taught in the classroom at Wesleyan. The only place that you really have an opportunity to understand how to impact on other people, how to persuade people to your point of view, what it takes to be, you know, the politics of leadership, that's learned in fraternities and in any kind of organization, whether it be the Outback Club or whatever organization it may be on campus, when someone takes responsibility and leadership. And you have to learn how to get your point across. And so for that reason, reason alone, although there may be other reasons, fraternities do, in fact, have an important role to play at this university. And Lord knows the trustees have committed $13 or $14 million to it. Now the sororities, quite rightfully, are banging on the door saying it's our turn. And it is their turn. And I personally will do everything I can to help them achieve their goal, because they deserve and have deserved, and they're overdue.
Okay, well, that's the next chapter. We've got to get that going. Thank you, Dick.
Perfect. Thank you.